even Mother Dell. "One plate per child," she says, "and you will eat what you take. There's no wasting food in this house." Lola and I nod, try to eat slower. Later, I wash dishes with Anya, Lola and the boys dry. The bouncy boy Mike keeps drifting closer and closer to me. I feel something pressed against my thigh. A small butter knife. "Tonight," he murmurs ominously. Then his hand transfers the knife to mine. He jangles away, stacking up freshly dried plates. Lola and I each get one pillow and two blankets. In the nursery, the babies are crying. I show Lola how to change diapers. Mother Dell sets us up with bottles. When there's a break, we both brush our teeth. But mostly we stay in the nursery. We hold the babies close. 8 p.m., lights out. We should change into our PJs, but we don't. Instead, we move the cribs around, creating a small pocket of space. We have to lie on our sides on the tattered carpet in order to fit. We don't mind. We've slept in smaller spaces. Briefly, I let myself relax. I feel my sister's breath on the back of my neck, as I have so many times before. The house is old. It creaks, it hums, but there's no screaming, no crash of bottles, no slamming of fists into walls. If anything, it is too quiet for me. The babies stir, make rumbling noises, sigh little baby sighs. I start to drift off. The door opens. Backlit from the glow in the hall, I can make out the form of the larger boy, Roberto, with golden Anya beside him. She's giggling. It's not a good sound. "Hey, newbies," the boy whispers. "Time to come out and play." Behind me, Lola whimpers. I am the oldest. These things are my responsibility. I finger the butter knife. I climb to my feet. I square off against them. I know this. Perfect families don't just happen. They have to be made. Mistakes, regret, repair. A mother drinks, the children are taken away. One child is separated, two must work to stay together. A younger sister is threatened, the older takes a stand. Mistakes, regret, repair. This is my family's story. And we're not finished yet. Chapter 13. Given it was a busy Saturday afternoon at the hospital, it took Dee Dee and Phil some time to find a supervisor who knew Juanita Baez and could point them in the right direction. But 30 minutes later, they were ensconced in the staff lounge with Nancy Corbin, an ER nurse who supposedly was close to the victim. "It's true, then?" the nurse was asking. She was a middle-aged woman with short, cropped blonde hair and deep blue eyes. Her hands were shaking as she raised her coffee cup, but her face remained set, a woman who'd given and received bad news before in her life. Dee Dee appreciated the nurse's composure. She didn't have time for theatrics right now. 5 hours after the first report of shots fired, time was not in their favor. "We heard a report on the news. The family's dead. Roxy's missing," the nurse continued. "Did you know Juanita's family?" "The kids, sure. She talked about them all the time. Her family was her life." "What about Roxana? Have you seen her today?" "No, but the ER has been very busy. We keep the TV on in the waiting area, which is how we knew about the Amber Alert. If Roxy showed up, someone would have noticed." "When was the last time you saw Juanita?" Phil asked.
We both worked graveyard Wednesday night. Juanita is designated night shift. She works Monday through Thursday graveyard, off for the weekends. I bounce around more, some days, some nights."
"But Juanita's schedule is set?" Phil pressed. "Isn't that unusual for nursing?"
"Yes, but Juanita has seniority. Plus, not everyone wants to work nights. For her, however, it meant more time with the kids. She'd work 11 p.m. to 7 a.m., which really turns out to be 8 or 9 a.m. Then she'd head to a local meeting. You know she's an alcoholic, right?"
"Yes." "Post-shift, straight to a meeting. That was very important to her. Then she'd finally make it home, sleep for 3 to 6 hours, depending, and wake up when the kids returned from school. She'd spend all afternoon and evening with them before reporting back to work." Grueling schedule, Dee Dee observed. She was content to let Phil take the lead with the interview. She considered Phil the yin to her yang. While she was hard-edged and intense, his presence was warm, even comforting. Between his thinning brown hair and relaxed-fit trousers, he looked exactly like what he was, a happily married father of four, which for many nervous witnesses or arrogant suspects was the perfect fit. Certainly Nancy Corbin had gravitated toward him from the first moment they'd sat down. It probably didn't hurt that, receding hairline and all, Phil retained a certain older guy charm.
"Please," Nurse Corbin was saying now, "that's only half the battle. On Fridays, Juanita basically had to keep herself awake all day so she'd be tired enough to sleep Friday night and be back to days on Saturday and Sunday before returning to night work on Mondays. Take it from me, that kind of flip schedule never gets any easier. But for Juanita, that made the most sense. Night shift is good money, plus she could be home for her kids' waking hours, even if it was at the expense of her own."
"She sounds like a caring mom," Phil said.
"Absolutely. She lost the kids once, I'm sure you've heard. She's very open about it. As an alcoholic, her rock bottom was the day Child Services took her kids away. She had to battle addiction, depression, the entire system to get her children back. She'll tell you she counts every day with them as a blessing." The nurse's expression faltered, broke. She looked down at her mug, then raised it for another shaky sip of coffee. "Do you know who did this?" she asked quietly.
"Does she have any enemies? Maybe recently lost a patient, has a family who blames her?"
Nancy shook her head.
"What about her fellow nurses, doctors?" Phil pressed.
"Everyone liked Juanita. She's solid under pressure, not one to complain or whine, and she has a wicked sense of humor. Night shift? You need these things."
"She's seeing anyone?" Dee Dee asked.
"You mean hospital staff?"
"No, she was committed to Charlie. They were good together."
"Any problems on the home front? Money troubles? Relationship woes?"
"Money's always tight," Nancy shrugged. "Welcome to healthcare, where we can't afford to help patients or pay the staff. Which is why Juanita worked nights instead of staying home with her kids. But I know things were tighter before she moved in with Charlie. She considered him a real godsend. Stable, hard-working guy, good with children, content not to party or drink. In the past year, she considered life to be looking up."
"He didn't drink?" Dee Dee asked, because Hector had implied that Charlie had his own partying ways.
"No." Nancy uttered the word firmly. "Juanita would never have stayed with him if he did. She'll tell you, sobriety isn't easy for her. But she loves her kids.
For her kids, she works a crazy schedule and stays clear of the booze."
"Exactly."
"And she and Charlie were happy?"
"Wednesday night, she had nothing bad to say." "You work graveyard detectives?"
"Back in my younger days," Phil assured her. "Now it's more of a 24/7 gig."
"Then you know what it's like. There's a bond that comes with being the only people alive when the rest of the world is sleeping. Juanita's been working graveyard for the past 3 years. A lot of things come out during that amount of time."
"You ever meet Charlie?" Dee Dee asked.
"Sure. If he was up and out to job sites early, he'd swing by with breakfast for Juanita. He seemed like a good guy. God knows I wouldn't mind a handsome contractor dropping off a breakfast burrito for me at 6 a.m.
"What about the kids?"
Phil changed gears.
"Roxanna's 16, right? Not easy to have a teenage daughter."
"Roxy? Hell, I'd adopt her. Organized, responsible. That girl is 16 going on 60, and Juanita knew it. Of all the things, I think Juanita regretted the toll her drinking took on Roxy most of all. After Hector left, during the dark days, as Juanita called them, Roxy took over care of her younger siblings. She fed them, did the laundry, got them off to school. If anything, Juanita was trying to figure out how to get Roxy to relax a little. Especially with Charlie around, Roxy could go back to the business of being a kid. But I don't know if you can rewind the clock like that."
"What about other family? His, has..."
"As for Charlie, I don't know. Juanita has a sister, Nina, with 4 kids, but they live in Philadelphia. When Juanita hit bottom and the state took her kids away, they were sent to foster homes, because Juanita's family was ruled as living too far away.
Plus, I can imagine having four kids of her own, Nina wasn't crazy about taking in three more. So, locally speaking, I only hear about her, Charlie, and the kids. Oh, and Rosie and Blaze, of course. Is Roxanna intense? Phil interjected. Maybe puts a lot of pressure on herself. We've heard she hasn't been sleeping.
Nancy paused, seemed to consider the question. She took another sip of coffee.
Juanita's been asking some questions, she said at last.
Some questions? Phil asked, exchanging a look with Dee Dee.
It started out with Lola, the younger daughter. She's always been a handful. Rebellious, unfocused, impulsive, not to mention hanging out with the wrong crowd. But in September, there was an incident. She was in trouble with a male teacher for not turning in her homework. He was lecturing her on how bad her grade would be. This was no way to start off the school year, etc. Apparently, Lola responded with some suggestions for how she could improve her grade. Some very explicit suggestions. Nancy looked at them. There were other kids in the classroom at the time, all of them, who then watched Lola reach down and touch the teacher in places she shouldn't have been touching.
Dee Dee blinked her eyes. Beside her, Phil had gone wide-eyed, but he spoke first.
This September? Lola's 13? We're talking 8th grade?
Nancy sighed heavily. The principal told Juanita this wasn't the first time Lola had come off as inappropriate. Last year there had been some red flags, but nothing this serious. The principal was concerned that the behavior had started about the time that Juanita had moved in with Charlie.
The principal thought Lola was being abused by Charlie, Dee Dee stated.
Juanita swore it wasn't Charlie. In her opinion, Lola's behavior had started before Charlie was ever in the picture. She thought something had happened while the girls were in foster care. Roxy and Lola were placed together. Lola won't talk about those days, and even Roxy doesn't say much. But according to her, Lola's been different ever since Juanita got her back.
So Juanita's been investigating the girls' foster care placement?
She's been digging around. A few weeks ago we had a patient in the ER who'd sliced his palm open cutting his bagel. You'd never believe how many of those we see between 6 and 7 a.m. Trust me, you're better off with donuts. But this guy turned out to be a lawyer. He and Juanita got to talking. He said he'd be interested in helping her.
What kind of lawyer?
Phil asked. Litigation, I guess. But he was telling Juanita if she could prove the state failed to protect her kids after taking them away. Nancy shrugged. Sounded like serious money. You know, suing for millions of dollars in damages kind of money.
If Juanita could prove her case, Dee Dee said slowly.
Could she?
According to you, neither girl was talking.
Another shrug. Like I said, Juanita was asking questions, and not just because of the money. Something was wrong with Lola. The girl had become wild. She and Juanita fought nonstop, like every night. It had been taking a toll.
Lola's been acting out.
Phil turned to Dee Dee.
Roxy's BFF. Her sister?
Possible, but why not simply ask for advice for her younger sister from the group of survivors?
To protect a younger sister's privacy, especially if it involves sexual abuse.
Slowly, Dee Dee nodded. She could see Phil's point. Not to mention a girl with Roxy's alleged sense of responsibility might already feel guilt-stricken that her sister had been assaulted while they were together in foster care. Another reason to seek help while still trying to guard her sister's secrets.
Name of the lawyer?
Phil was asking.
I don't know.
Nancy frowned. Hang on, Juanita's locker's over here. She might have a business card.
She got up, moved over to the bank of gray-painted lockers. A bit of fiddling, and she had it open. Dee Dee and Phil didn't say a word. It was nice of the nurse to do their job for them.
From what Dee Dee could see, the locker held a stack of clean scrubs, a cardigan for layering, and several plastic water bottles. The inside of the door was plastered with photos. The kids, Juanita and the kids, Charlie and the two dogs. Happy family moments frozen in time. By all accounts, Juanita Baez had reinvented herself in the past few years. Sobered up, cleaned up, anteed up to get her children back. Good job, stable guy, decent home. Dee Dee knew the kind of requirements the court placed on addicts to get their kids back. Success stories were few and far between. But Juanita Baez had done it, only to realize that one-year gap had cost her children more than she realized. Here it is. Nancy had found the card taped to the door near the bottom. Daniel Meekum. Did Roxy know her mother was speaking with a lawyer? Dee Dee asked. I don't know how much Juanita shared with them. Juanita was angry, but she also blamed herself. If she hadn't been drinking so hard...
Did she believe Roxy was abused as well?
Phil spoke up. Nancy shrugged. Roxy doesn't act out the way Lola does. Not to mention, Lola's a looker. And Roxy's... well, Roxy. Good girl, smart, but not gonna stop traffic, if you know what I mean. Then again, does that matter when it comes to abuse? I don't know. I think what Juanita had mostly at this point was a lot of questions, and two girls who still didn't trust her with the answers. Sad, but true.
Dee Dee nodded.
Do you think Roxy would have harmed her own family?
No.
Definite statement, not an ounce of doubt.
What about Hector Alvalos?
Phil asked. Manny's dad?
Nancy sounded surprised.
I don't know. Juanita and Hector have had their ups and downs, but with both of them sober... To be honest, Juanita doesn't talk about him much, other than mentioning Hector picking up Manny or dropping him off on Sundays. I assumed that meant all is well on that front.
And Roxy and Lola's fathers? Dee Dee asked. Doesn't Juanita ever talk about them?
Never.
No chance they've recently re-entered the picture?
At 3 a.m., something that big would have come up.
She know their names? Phil pushed.
Two different guys, that much I know. Clearly Roxy's dad was white. I mean, her hair's brown, her eyes a greenish hazel.
Dee Dee nodded. They just had the family photos for reference. Lola Baez had the same exotic beauty as her mother, with jet-black hair, dark eyes, dusky skin, delicate bone structure. Roxana, however, stood apart, her hair more brown than black, her skin paler, her features larger, more awkward. She was hardly an ugly duckling, but standing between her mother and younger sister, she probably felt like one.
Juanita in her younger days, Nancy Corbin was saying now, let's just say half her battles with Lola are due to the fact they're too alike.
She's never reached out to the girl's possible fathers, Dee Dee filled in for her. Maybe she's not even sure of their names.
Haven't you ever been young and stupid?
Not quite that stupid.
Dee Dee paused, waited to see if the woman had anything more to add. Then, when Nancy remained quiet,
all right, if you think of anything else,
Dee Dee held out her card. Please give us a call.
Sure.
The nurse hesitated.
You really don't know where Roxy is?
No.
Someone could have taken her?
We are pursuing all leads.
She's a good girl. Whatever happened, she doesn't deserve this. She already had her family ripped apart once. It doesn't seem right for her to have to go through it again.
Dee Dee and Phil shook the nurse's hand. They left her to return to her shift while they returned to work. They'd just made it back to the lobby, Dee Dee turning over this newest information in her mind, trying to identify the next logical step, when Phil's phone rang. He glanced at the screen.
Neil,
he said, referring to his squad mate, whom they'd left behind at the crime scene working with Detective Manley. They both stopped walking as he answered it. In the way these things work, Neil did all the talking. Phil nodded. His eyes widened.
Coming.
He ended the call, returning the phone to his pocket, before announcing to Dee Dee,
there's been another shooting. Hector Alvalos.
Dee Dee's mouth fell open.
And get this. A girl matching Roxy Baez's description was spotted running from the area.
Chapter 14. I left Tricia Lobdell Cass's house and walked around aimlessly, trying to think big thoughts. Who was Roxy Baez? Responsible student, caring sister, walker of dogs. Maybe she'd lied to our group about having a friend in need. Did I still believe she needed help? For herself? Her sister? And given all that had happened, where would she go now? What would she do? I hadn't lied to Sergeant Warren earlier.
On the support group's discussion board, I recommended fleeing to a public location if one felt in fear of one's life, someplace with a lot of witnesses and cameras. But in Roxy's case, that would have brought her to immediate police attention. According to the latest news bulletins, at least, the search remained active. The cops had found the dogs, but not the girl. How? How could a teenager disappear so completely? I put my money on a friend. Had to be. Maybe this Mike Davis? But someone she trusted, and who trusted her enough to hide her, given the circumstances, which would make that person a co-conspirator. I kept checking my phone compulsively, hoping Roxy's guidance counselor had made contact with Mike Davis, that he would call any second and have all the answers to my questions. When my phone actually buzzed, I nearly jumped out of my skin. I answered it quickly, but it wasn't some kid named Mike Davis. It was Sarah from our survivors group. And the news she had was even more shocking. The coffee shop where I'd met Sergeant Warren and Detective Phil was now roped off with ribbons of yellow crime scene tape. Dee Dee and Phil were kneeling down next to the tree where the dogs had been tied up. Both dogs were now gone, and there were bright red stains marring the sidewalk. Not the dogs, thank heavens, who remained uninjured, but Hector Alvalos, who'd arrived to pick them up. I didn't try to duck under the crime scene tape. In my experience, Dee Dee already had an instinct for these things. Sure enough. What the hell? Seriously, you again? She stared at me hard. I didn't flinch. I have information, I said. Be still, my beating heart. I didn't take the bait. I was used to her sarcasm by now. We all had our reasons for being hard. I knew mine. I always figured Dee Dee had her own story to tell. A few minutes passed. She conferred with Phil, their voices too low for me to catch. Then finally, reluctantly, she rose to standing and crossed over to where I stood. Hector Alvalos? I asked. How do you know that? Everyone talks. Not to mention, you ever want the inside scoop on a news story? Tip the cameraman. No one ever pays attention to the cameramen. She frowned. I'll have to remember that, she said finally, as close to praise from her as I'd probably ever get. Is he okay? Fortunately, he got shot only a few blocks from a major medical center. Bullet hit his shoulder. With any luck, he'll recover. Where are the dogs? After the shooting, some teacher from Roxy's school showed up to take them. She swears she can handle them for a few days. I nodded, wondering if she meant the guidance counselor, Tricia Lobdell Cass. This Hector, he's the father of one of Roxy's siblings? Manny, her younger brother. I pursed my lips, trying to make sense of this news. Was Hector close to the family? Spent a lot of time at the house? Apparently he picked up his son every Sunday. Could he have been the shooter this morning? I asked. Dee Dee gave me a look. What? Hector Alvalos shot and killed his ex and her new family, including his own son? I shrugged. Domestic violence. Gotta look at all the players, right? Even the exes. Are you going to become a detective, Flora? Give up this vigilante business? Go legit? Then I'd have to do paperwork. Dee Dee sighed, but I could see a faint hint of a smile. Things I should have thought of years ago. All right, you want to learn how to think like law enforcement? Yes, as a matter of protocol, we'll check Hector's alibi for this morning. The man does have a record. At the moment, however, we have no reports of any recent tensions between him and his ex. But you still believe Roxy, the responsible one? My turn to press. Dee Dee held up her hands. I'm not saying I believe a 16-year-old girl shot her entire family either, especially given how close she seems to have been to her siblings, and without any addictions or evil boyfriends to lead her astray. Currently, I'm approaching the family's murders with an open mind. Except for this incident. I nodded toward the stain on the sidewalk, where Phil was kneeling down examining. Rumor is that a girl matching Roxy's description was seen running up the street. That's what we've heard. How good a look did the witnesses get? They saw her face, enough to recognize her from her photo all over the news? More like reports of a dark-haired female running up the street, wearing jeans and a hoodie. That's it? According to the guidance counselor I spoke to at Roxy's school, there are Hispanic girl gangs at both the high school and middle school. That description could fit any of their members.
Dee Dee scowled at me.
You're conducting interviews of Roxy's associates?
I was looking for help with the dogs, I said primly.
Worked, too. Sounds like the guidance counselor is the woman who came to get them.
Then, before Dee Dee could wind up again, I added, Baby blue backpack. If it really was Roxy running up the street, she's always carrying this light blue backpack. You should be able to see that on the area's security cameras. That'll be more reliable confirmation than any eyewitness statement.
Gee, thanks for the insight, Dee Dee said, but her voice wasn't as sarcastic. Reliable confirmation was important, and she knew it.
Did anyone see her shoot the gun?
No. People heard the shot. Hector went down. Then came reports of a girl fleeing up the street.
Same side of the street or opposite?
Dee Dee regarded me thoughtfully.
You're the survivalist. You tell me.
I considered the challenge.
Handgun, not a rifle?
9mm handgun. Okay, so the shooter would need to be relatively close. Same side of the street would be ideal.
Hell, walking up to Hector and then pulling the trigger would be best, but up that close, the shooter shouldn't have missed.
Multiple bullets to the chest or stomach made more sense than a single shot to shoulder. Not to mention, Roxy Baez was one of the most sought-after people in Boston. Could she really have walked straight through a crowd of coffee drinkers without any of them noticing?
I turned my attention across the street, where there was another designated spot of urban greenery. A tree, with some low bushes, bright patches of pansies. Someone could stand pressed against the tree, say a skinny teen keeping her face averted, and go unnoticed for a bit, which would give her line of sight on the dogs.
I paused. Maybe I wasn't the best at thinking of a normal 16-year-old's worries, but a girl who'd just lost her entire family was in fear for her life. This? Lying in wait to avenge her family's deaths? I could see it perfectly.
You said Hector was here for the dogs? I asked Sergeant Warren.
Yeah.
Because you called him?
Because Roxy left notes attached to the dogs' collars, asking whoever found them to please call Hector's number.
I nodded.
If it were me,
I turned, gave her a little shrug.
The dogs make excellent bait, I said at last.
Dee Dee stared at me, blinked.
You're saying Roxana wrote the notes intentionally? Not call this number because these dogs deserve a great home, but call this number in order to bring this man to this location where I'll be waiting for him.
Look across the street. She stands there, next to that tree, her face obscured by the lower branches. She just needs to find the right spot to peer through, and she can keep watch over the dog's location without anyone being the wiser.
Dee Dee studied the tree across the way, then looked back to the blood on her side of the street.
Phil, she called out, over there, that twin to this greenery. Check out the base. Look for casings and have the crime techs run trajectory.
It wouldn't have been an easy shot, I thought to myself, which explained why she only grazed the man's shoulder.
You talk about these things in your chat room that no longer exists?
Dee Dee was demanding to know.
How to shoot across a busy city street?
No.
But thinking outside the box? Staying one step ahead?
Absolutely.
Dee Dee sighed, rubbed her temples.
Leaving the dogs behind, the notes on their collars.
You think she lured Hector here? She was targeting him.
Pretty fucking brilliant, if you ask me. Not to mention cold. Very cold.
If it really was her running up the street, I said carefully, because the description wasn't a slam dunk.
Why?
What is Roxy's motive for targeting Hector? What aren't you telling me?
I shook my head.
Nothing. I didn't even know Hector's name before today. I'm learning as I go, just like you are. But now that we're here, considering all the possibilities, my first thought is revenge. Maybe you don't think Hector has anything to do with the death of her mother and siblings, but you're still learning about the home situation. Roxy lived it. Gotta think she's better informed than you.
Dee Dee made a face.
Great. So now I get to come down hard on a man allegedly grieving for the death of his son and nursing a bullet wound.
Gonna go vigilante? I asked her. Give up the BPD, join us on the wild side. Less paperwork.
Don't tempt me.
Do you know what kind of gun she has, smartass?
No, like I said, you don't recommend firearms for females.
Great. Where is she?
I blinked my eyes.
Beats me. If she was spotted running up the street, surely someone's on her trail.
That eyewitness account of a girl fleeing came in a good 5 minutes after the shooting. By the time more uniforms arrived to work the street, she already had a decent head start. Patrols headed north, but you know how it is in a city. She could have gone in a million directions since then.
Or she has a bolt hole.
A hiding spot?
What makes you say that?
Can an inexperienced teenage girl really go unnoticed for this long while remaining on the streets?
Even this.
I gestured to where the dogs had been tied up. You and I were here 2 hours ago. The dogs were left, what, another hour before that? She could leave the notes, but she'd have no way of knowing when someone would find the dogs and when Hector would finally show up. If she really was using them for bait, then she'd have to stick somewhere close. How else would she know when her plan worked?
Not bad thinking, Dee Dee murmured. Not bad at all.
We both started looking around. I dismissed the green space. It was one thing to use the tree for cover once Hector showed up, but to stand in one spot for hours before that? I looked for deep doorways where a person could lurk in the shadows, or busy locations, the coffee shop, a little market across the street, some neighboring boutiques, where Roxana could drift through, keeping her head down and pretending to shop, while all the while casting furtive glances across the street. But again, the number of cops patrolling the area, the mass of TVs and smartphones already broadcasting her picture, feeding the general public news, surely someone would have caught on. Hey, doesn't that girl look familiar to you?
Dee Dee got it first. While I was looking around, she'd looked up.
There, across the street above the market, a bank of windows on the second floor with a large sign, for lease.
Vacant real estate, with a perfect view of the coffee shop.
What do you think? Dee Dee asked me.
I would definitely break in there.
Roxana as good as you at picking locks?
Only one way to find out.
Are you going to tell me to stay behind?
What would be the point?
I finally smiled.
Knew I'd grow on you.
Shut up. Pay attention. We're looking for a 16-year-old girl who may have shot her family, or at least her brother's father. Frankly, I'm relying on your presence to distract her long enough not to kill us both.
I couldn't argue with that.
We headed across the street, Dee Dee's hand already in position on the butt of her weapon. Chapter 15. Dee Dee kept Flora at her back as they headed up the narrow stairs to the second floor of the building. She wasn't a big fan of the girl, because she wasn't a big fan of people who colored outside the lines. But Flora had never shown any violent tendencies toward cops or innocent civilians. It was merely the would-be rapists, kidnappers, and killers who had to look out. If only Dee Dee could place Roxana Baez on that spectrum, because right now it felt like the more she learned about the girl, the less she understood. The steep stairs gave way to a larger open landing. One door to the left bore a string of last names, maybe an accounting firm or bail bondsman for all Dee Dee knew. To the right was the vacant unit in question. It featured a row of windows allowing Dee Dee to peer in. Long rectangular space, no furniture, but divided in half by a blue-colored cubicle system that ran down the middle of the room. The open cubicles facing Dee Dee and Flora appeared empty. Every space on the other side of the central divider, however, remained an unseen mystery. Flora was already at the door, inspecting the lock system.
"Gonna pick it?" Dee Dee asked her dryly.
"No need. It's the punch key kind used by most realtors. We just need the right four numbers." As Dee Dee watched, Flora hit 1, 2, 3, 4. Not a bad starting point, but Dee Dee had a better idea.
"I'd go with 3606.
Flora obeyed. The lock clicked open. Flora stared at her.
"How'd you know?"
"Most companies program the systems with the last four digits of their realtors' cell phones. That way they can also track who's been in and out of the property. Now look up." where there was a smiling picture of a beautiful brunette with a crisp blue suit and a fat string of pearls. "My name is Sandra Johnson, and I'm here to sell you a brand new future," the poster proclaimed. Below the photo, the realtor's cell phone number had been written in with a fat black marker. "Sure you don't want to go vigilante?" Flora asked. "Gee, I feel so honored. Now stand back. I'm the one with the shield and the gun. I go first. If all else fails, I have powdered coffee creamer and I know how to use it." "What?" "Look it up sometime." "God help me," Dee Dee muttered, then pushed open the door and eased into the dusty room. She paused first. In an area with limited visibility, it was always smart to use your other senses. What did she hear? The nervous breath of an intruder on the other side of the blue fabric divider? Creak of a floorboard as the person stepped back? Click of a hammer as an anxious teenager cocked her weapon? Nothing. The faint whir of traffic noise from the street outside. That was it. Smell? Dust. Disuse. A space that had been empty for a while. Had to be incredibly expensive, this amount of commercial real estate in Brighton, meaning it would take the right company with the right plan to finally put it under agreement. And until then, great hangout for a kid on the run, where she could remain tucked behind the dividers, out of sight of anyone coming up the stairs, while hunkering low enough not to be spotted from the street. Chances were the girl was long gone. If she had been here, watching for Hector's return and her opportunity to ambush him, then mission accomplished. She'd fled up the street, and this was all old news. Some small prey, once flushed from their burrows, kept on running. Others instinctively doubled back and went to ground. More often than not, it was those rabbits that lived to see another day. Meaning, it was possible Roxanna had returned here, back to her safe place, which is why they couldn't find any trace of her on the street. And even now, she was hunkered down in one of the empty cubicles, backpack at her feet, gun held tight to her chest. The door leading into the abandoned office space didn't sit directly in the middle, but closer to the right-hand corner. Dee Dee turned in that direction now, wanting to be able to get around the long blue cubicle wall as quickly as possible and peer into the other half of the room. She kept her footsteps light. Flora remained in the doorway, ostensibly out of harm's way, or maybe simply positioned to grab Roxanna if she attempted escape. Dee Dee still wasn't certain of Flora's loyalties in all this. But if Roxy truly had killed her own family, including her two younger siblings, God save her from Flora's wrath as much as from Dee Dee's quest for justice. The air grew dustier now that she was moving. Dee Dee wrinkled her nose, fought the sneeze. With her left hand, she unsnapped her hip holster, slowly slid out her firearm. During the brutally cold days of winter, she could still feel the ache in her left shoulder, ghosts of the avulsion fracture she'd suffered 2 years ago. Given her own choice, she preferred to fire her weapon with a single-arm stance, her right arm. But with regular PT and time, she could now achieve the two-handed weaver stance required to clear her physical and return to full duty. And on a warm day such as today, her left arm rotated smoothly, bringing her Glock 10 up out of her holster and into the ready position without undue effort. She neared the end of the long cubicle system, eased back on her footsteps, slowed her breathing. In, out, crouch low. She stepped around the cubicle wall. The sun poured in through the bank of street-side windows, illuminating a clean, empty space. Fast now. Boom, boom, boom. No time to think. She kept low and raced down the line of boxed spaces. Nothing, nothing, nothing. And then, water bottle. Empty, crumpled, sitting in the middle of an abandoned office cube. And footprints. Faint, but there. Oval spots in the thin film of dust coating the floor. She peered closer. In the stream of sunlight, she made out a thread. Light blue, heavy duty, the kind of thing that might unravel and fall from a fraying backpack. Dee Dee finished her inspection, then returned to the middle cubicle as Flora entered the office space. "Got anything?" Flora asked. "Empty water bottle, single blue thread. Not exactly a smoking gun. No, but signs that someone was camping out here. My money's on Roxana Baez.
Dee Dee raised her gaze, studied Flora. The woman had walked around the divider unit and was looking at the crumpled water bottle on the floor. Then she turned and considered the view out the window directly across from it.
From here she could see the dogs, Flora confirmed. Not the best view, as it's partially obscured by tree branches and umbrella stands, but it would do. She could hide out, keep watch. Minute Hector appears, she darts back down the stairs to the open street and makes her move.
You tell her about this place, Dee Dee asked evenly.
Me?
Flora sounded genuinely surprised. She reached reflexively for the bandage on her left hand, which Dee Dee noticed had fresh pinpricks of blood.
This isn't my neck of the woods. First time I've been to this coffee shop, building, everything.
What about someone else from your group?
A shrug. I can't swear to anything, but I'd be surprised. This?
Flora waved her bandaged hand around the empty space.
This is pretty sophisticated. And the trick with gaining entry using the realtor's cell phone number? We haven't discussed this in the chat room, I can tell you that.
Using the dogs as bait? Another clever strategy.
I know.
Flora frowned, looking as concerned as Dee Dee felt. She walked around a few more steps, finally shaking her head, as if there was something she couldn't compute.
You said the girl spotted running up the street was wearing a hoodie. Does that match Roxy's description from earlier in the day?
We have an eyewitness who saw her in a red shirt when she first left her home. Easy enough, though, for her to have the hoodie in her pack, then throw it on later once she saw the Amber Alert.
Okay, carting around a change of nondescript clothes, better yet, bulky clothes that might distort sense of size, I'll take credit for that trick. But this? Tying up two dogs to lure someone to a destination right outside your perfectly selected hideaway?
Flora shook her head again.
What's this girl's background again? Does she have a history of running away from home or something? I mean, we didn't teach her this. So where and when did Roxana Baez acquire this level of skill?
Good question. From what we've heard so far, Roxy is a good student, family caretaker, and responsible oldest daughter. Meaning none of this makes any sense. They lapsed into silence, both of them thinking.
The guidance counselor from the high school mentioned gangs, Flora said at last, a group of other Hispanic girls who wanted Roxy to join them. According to the rumor mill, Lola is already a member. Could this have something to do with that? Roxy finally succumbed to the pressure. She's carrying out some plan they already had in place, meaning they provided the strategy.
You mean a plan where Roxy kills her entire family and then Hector? Why would she do such a thing?
Or the gang killed her family, Flora said, to force Roxy into cooperating. What do you know about Hector? Is it possible he could be a drug dealer? Gang murdered her family. She went after Hector in retaliation?
Dee Dee raised a brow, considered the matter. Initially, he came across as a grieving father, but with our resources focused on locating Roxana, we haven't conducted a deep drill into the man's personal history yet. Anything's possible.
Maybe that's why Roxy has been so fearful. She knows her sister was initiated into the gang, which, of course, would only increase the pressure for Roxy to join, too. Maybe both of them were facing demands to participate in drug running or other illegal activity.
Why would the gang kill Lola, Dee Dee countered, but let Roxy live?
As a message.
Killing an entire family is a pretty big message, and one that attracts a lot of police attention.
I think we should be asking Hector these questions, Flora said. He lived, right? Let's put him in the hot spot.
We? Dee Dee said.
Flora shrugged. Just an idea, you know. Not that I don't have my own things to do.
Dee Dee frowned, crossed her arms over her chest. What do you mean?
You know what? Never mind.
Flora glanced at her phone, which had just buzzed in her hand.
You go talk to Hector. Take that Detective Phil. He's pretty good.
Gee, thanks. I have something else to look into.
Which is? We'll have to see. Maybe 2 hours from now I'll find you again.
With Roxana Baez in tow?
I doubt I'll be that lucky, but you never know.
Dee Dee crossed her arms, studied Flora, not buying the woman's sudden desire to leave for a second. Millions of things to do, Dee Dee thought. Contact the crime scene techs to process this latest find, check in with Phil, and yes, interview Hector Alvalos at the hospital while seeing what other leads Neil and Carol had turned up. Lots of work. Plenty of work. Not to mention wanting at least 10 minutes to call home and learn about the puppy, because that was in the back of her mind as well. Was there a new addition to the family? And was it right now eating her favorite shoes? And still, here she was, standing with Boston's most notorious vigilante, a mysterious woman sporting a bloody bandage and a buzzing cell phone. "I don't trust you," Dee Dee said at last. "You're involved in all of this somehow. You're just going to make me work to figure it out." "I don't know where Roxana Baez is. I doubt she killed her family. But this latest shooting? I don't know what's going on. You have my word on that. But I'm not walking away anytime soon. I want answers as much as you do." "Why?" Flora shrugged. "Because I do. Because maybe if some violent perv hadn't snatched me off a beach, a cop is what I would have naturally become. But here we are, and now this is who I am, and this is what I do." "You find her first. We want access. I have no interest in anyone else getting hurt." "But," Dee Dee pressed, "if this does have to do with gangs, and you magically have an opportunity to interfere with a group of drug dealers, I would still call you first. That world, I don't know what I don't know."
"Confidential informant," Dee Dee stated crisply.
"What?"
"Learn what you're going to learn and report back to me, as my CI. Anonymity for you, so you can still look cool in the eyes of your fan club, and genuine help finding a missing girl for me. Consider it the first rung up the policing ladder."
"Wow. Do I get a ring? A paperweight?"
"You get your 2 hours. Then, yes, we'll be meeting again."
"Sounds ominous."
"Fine, I'm in. But you tell me what you learn from Hector Alvalos. The price for my information is your information."
"Then I'll start with a down payment. While you were learning about Hispanic gangs in the public schools, I learned that Juanita Baez was investigating the time her children spent in foster care. Roxy and Lola were placed together. Juanita strongly suspected Lola had been sexually abused, though neither girl would talk about it. She contacted a lawyer on the subject. If she had proof, or was on the verge of finding proof, we could be talking a multi-million dollar lawsuit, not to mention criminal charges."
"Sounds like motive for murder to me."
"Phil and I will interview Juanita's lawyer, but I'm thinking it would be good to also talk to some of the kids placed in the same home as Lola and Roxy. Being foster kids, they probably aren't that forthcoming with adult authority figures, whereas someone like me, maybe they'll recognize you from the news."
Flora rolled her eyes.
"Are you practicing with knives?" Dee Dee asked abruptly. She gestured to Flora's left hand. "No way that injury's from sparring."
"I'm not playing with knives," Flora said.
Dee Dee waited, used her best detective stare, but Flora didn't offer any more details. Sometimes Dee Dee wished Jacob Ness had lived, if only so she could meet the monster who'd turned out such a hardened foe. He had to have been beyond awful for Flora to be so resilient now. She wondered if Flora understood her own strength, or if, under the cover of night, the woman still felt like that helpless college student all over again. Some nights, Dee Dee still dreamed of a voice crooning, "Rock-a-bye, baby," right before she flew down the stairs. As a detective, she couldn't condone vigilantism. But as a woman who'd once been there, she understood. Dee Dee held out her hand. Flora shook it. And just like that, Dee Dee thought, she made a deal with the devil herself. Flora exited the office space. Dee Dee got on the phone with the crime scene techs.
Chapter 16. According to graphic novels, every hero has an origin story. I'd watched enough movies to know how it worked. Something terrible happened. The hero lost everything he or she loved and was left a wreck of a human being.
At which point, cue the music, the hero rose from the ashes, a leaner, meaner model, and the quest for vengeance began, while the crowd cheered wildly. Did this make Jacob my origin story? Did this mean, in some perverse way, I owed everything I was now to him? I didn't like this idea. I liked the story I fed to Sergeant Warren. I would have survived the beach in Florida, returned to school in Boston, and somewhere along the way realized policing was a good fit for me. A job with purpose that involved less sitting and more doing. Maybe I would have even returned to the wilds of Maine, a small town deputy, where I could play with foxes. Who knows? It's possible that young, hopeful Flora wouldn't have been a very good cop. She had a tendency to see the best in everyone. Probably not a great trait in an investigator. So maybe Jacob was my origin story. The person I was now, filled with purpose, clever survival skills, and a keen sense of vengeance, was the person I could only become after spending 472 days with him. It wasn't something I wanted to think about. And yet, we all have to come from something, right? It takes a villain to make a hero. And it took a monster to make me. When I was two blocks away from Roxy's hideout, my cell buzzed again. Caller ID unknown, but I was guessing Mike Davis, Roxy's friend, finally reaching out via the guidance counselor. He'd called for the first time while I'd been standing next to the hypervigilant Sergeant Warren. I'd done my best to send a discreet reply text, "Cops around, we'll call you back." Upon leaving, I'd added, "Let's meet in person." Timing would now be right for his return call. I answered crisply, "Flora Dane." The voice on the other end sounded breathless and spoke in muffled tones, as if the caller didn't want to be overheard.
30 minutes, he said. "There's a park. I need your name. You know who this is. I'm trying to help Roxanna. Come to the park."
He rattled off directions. "I'm wearing a blue windbreaker and a Patriots cap," I managed to get out.
"I know."
Then he was gone.
30 minutes. Not much time.
I called Sarah, and we made our plans accordingly. On a sunny Saturday afternoon, the park was crowded. Little kids in bright jackets shrieking as they raced across the grass. Joggers in crazy patterned spandex tights running along the winding paths. Couples with dogs. Couples without dogs. The park was a rare patch of green in the midst of intense urban blight, and the locals were all taking advantage. I'd never met Mike Davis, and the guidance counselor hadn't given me much to go on, but I still spied him immediately. Lone teenage boy standing off to the side, hunkered down self-consciously in a worse-for-the-wear gray hoodie. I didn't approach him directly, but picked the path that would bring me closest to his line of sight. He looked up sharply in my direction. I tapped the brim of my Patriots hat, feeling like I was in a spy movie. He nodded hesitantly, then moved forward, falling in step beside me. He had a curious gait, as much up and down as forward, like a pogo stick being forced into horizontal momentum. He didn't speak right away, his fingers drumming the top of his thighs as we moved. I wondered if he was on something. Crank, cocaine, Adderall? Kids abused anything and everything these days, including ADHD meds. Or maybe that was the issue. He needed ADHD meds. I wasn't sure. Jacob loved his drugs, but he rarely shared. I learned to recognize the signs that it was going to be a long night, but what he took, how much, and how often remained a mystery to me.
"Over here,"
the kid said at last. I followed him to a relatively quiet area of the park by a group of bushes. My mother could probably tell you what the plants were. I'd never had the patience.
"You're looking for Roxanna,"
he said. No preamble. He jiggled when he stood. I tried to see his eyes, understand what I was dealing with, but he kept his gaze down, his face averted. "I'm a friend," I said at last. "Part of a group of friends. She reached out to us a few weeks ago, looking for help." He nodded. This didn't seem to be news to him, which was encouraging. "Have you heard from her?" I asked evenly. Hard shake. "Do you know that her family is dead?"
"Shot, all of them. Even Lola and Manny."
"She didn't do it!" Blinking now. Angry, I thought. And maybe something else. Tears? Grief?
"Blaze and Rosie?" he asked at last. They're okay. I think your guidance counselor, Ms. Lovdell-Cass, has them now. He nodded. Ms. Lovdell-Cass said you were friends with Roxana. You hung out together sometimes at school? Another nod. I understand she was having some issues with a group of girls. They wanted her to join their gang. They were pressuring her. Gang? He snorted derisively. Bunch of hoes. Roxy was too good for them, and they knew it.
Doesn't mean they were happy about it.
It wasn't like that. This is Roxy. She wasn't joining some gang. She was trying to get help for her sister, for Lola.
I waited, wanting him to do the talking. He was drumming his fingers against his jeans again, a relentless tap, tap, tap.
Lola had started hanging out with some of the girls, like the middle school gangsters.
Shrug. Not a surprise. Another shrug. She was always getting in trouble. Roxy's job was to get her back out. But this was bigger. Schools, prisons, neighborhoods, gangs rule them all. Gotta join, gotta belong. Everyone wants to be part of a family.
The boy hummed notes I didn't understand. Except for Roxy and me. We're loners. Always have been, always will be. Tougher life, but if you're a big enough loser, they leave you alone.
You and Roxy are outsiders?
Sure. You gonna hang out with me? Be my friend?
He looked up then, big brown eyes framed in thick lashes. He had puppy dog eyes, I thought, but there was something different about his gaze. He was trying to meet mine, but remained just off. Not drugs. Asperger's, maybe. Some kind of syndrome. High-functioning, but enough to keep him forever separate. He was right. A tougher life in high school.
Was Lola into drugs?
She joined the gang for them.
She was using?
She told Roxy she needed them. But no needle tracks. Roxy checked. She thought maybe Lola was dealing.
Lola was dealing drugs? What kind of drugs?
More humming.
She wanted to be part of the scene. Belonging. Better than being alone. She learned that the hard way. Plus, you know, money, power, rise up the food chain. She was pretty. Might as well use it.
What do you mean?
The kid's jangling was contagious. I found myself bobbing along as if to keep up.
Mother Dell's. I warned them day one. Never get caught alone.
Who is Mother Dell?
Foster mom. Grimace. Don't get sent there.
Wait, you were in the same foster care as Lola and Roxana?
Dee Dee had mentioned that Juanita Baez believed something had happened to Lola and Roxy during their time in foster placement. I hadn't realized, however, that Mike Davis had been part of that time as well.
Yep. Mother Dell's. Farmer in the Dell. Farmer in the Dell.
The kid hummed again, then stopped just as abruptly.
But they got out. Real mom cleaned up her act, took them away. Who knew it could happen?
He shrugged. They left. Didn't see them again for years.
They left? But you stayed at Mother Dell's? Are you still living there?
Since I was 5.
And the foster home is here in Brighton?
Farmer in the Dell, farmer in the Dell, farmer in the Dell,
he droned.
I'm confused. If the foster home is here in Brighton, and Juanita lives in Brighton, where did the girls go after they returned to their mom? Wouldn't you have still been in school together? Seen each other there?
Roxy's mom works at St. Elizabeth's. That is Brighton. Foster home is Brighton. But Brighton is expensive. So Mother Dell has many kids, especially babies. Lots of money in babies. But Roxy's mom is a real mom, not foster care. State doesn't pay for her kids. So she moved out to the burbs. Cheaper rent.
Mike nodded sagely, rocked back on his heels, stable housing being one of the conditions for a child's return. I thought I was getting it. Brighton was too expensive for a single mom with 3 kids, so while Juanita had worked in Brighton, she'd moved outside the city, most likely commuting to keep her costs down. As Mike had said, the family court would have attached a number of conditions to her regaining custody of her children, and stable living conditions would have been one of them.
So when Juanita got Roxy and Lola back, they moved...
The boy shrugged.
Out.
Okay. But they ended up returning to Brighton, I filled in. How come?
Charlie the contractor. He has a house in Brighton, fixing it up. He met Roxy's mom in the ER. Cut himself on the job. She stitched him up, then moved in with him. His house is closer to her job. Free, stable housing. Conditions met.
I nodded. So Lola and Roxy had left the area, then returned.
But not you, I added quietly. You had to stay at Mother Dell's.
He blinked his eyes rapidly, didn't say a word.
When did you meet again?
Last year.
Roxana showed up at the high school, right before Christmas.
She remember you?
Michael stopped bouncing, stared at me.
She will never forget me.
What about the other kids from the foster home?